think back for a second here. What was your favorite place to hang out in Seattle? All-time favorite, the place where some of your best memories were made. Maybe it was the High Score Arcade or Sit and Spin or the OK Hotel. Why did you love that place so much? And what did you lose when it went away? Those were questions writer and ethnographer Jamie Garbacik wanted to try and answer when she started a project asking for stories about disappearing places in Seattle. It's called Ghosts of Seattle Past. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
You're the title of the project, the title of the book, Ghosts of Seattle Past, and you might think these are about haunted places in Seattle. There are plenty of ghost stories in this town, but this is about places that no longer exist. Why did you decide to call those places that no longer exist ghosts?
Well, I think that comes down to the inspiration for the book in the first place, which in a lot of respects was the fact that I felt that people were mourning and didn't have a place to put that, didn't have a vehicle or a way to vent or process all of the change. And it did feel as though people were becoming a bit haunted by the places that they missed. And the ghosts for me are people's memories more than they are the places that are gone. But you can also say that the haunts, in air quotes, you know, the places that we all haunted, the gathering places that we spent time becoming the best versions of ourselves in, and the places that shaped the city and that shaped different communities, those haunts are our ghosts as well.
Well, initially, the project you had in mind was smaller in scope than what it is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a website, but it was also going to be an art exhibit and a zine. Mm-hmm. But what happened? What caused the scope of it to change?
The response to the call for submissions. We just had an avalanche, a veritable avalanche of stories come in. I mean, there were hundreds, and the parameters were really simple. The place had to be public. It had to be gone, and you had to have a personal memory of the space. It couldn't be like a historical thing that you felt was significant. You had to have had the memory yourself. It exploded.
You described the number of submissions you got as an avalanche. You put your hand over your heart as you were describing all of the submissions you got. What's a story that comes to mind that you got that you would have never expected to get?
Okay. Yeah, I've got one for you. So Janet Schurel sent me a note about her brother, Fritz, who had drowned in a bog in West Seattle when he was a kid, when they were very young. And I was confused at first about how this was a lost place for her. I mean, it was clearly a very compelling and very sad story, but I wasn't sure what she meant for me to be marking or preserving as the space that had been lost. And what it turned out that bog had been a gardening space for a lot of Japanese families that produced food for Pike Place Market, but during the internment, they all were taken, and when they were, that arable land became a bog, and children drowned in it. Yeah. I had never heard anything about that before. There's been very little reportage on it, honestly. But what that did for me was to completely resituate the way I thought about our interconnectivity in the city, because when we think about the internment, it's clearly a specifically a tragedy for the Japanese community and for the international community, but it's not, you know? I mean, their disappearance has a profound effect on everyone around them as well. And I guess I just felt like that story really made a very visual metaphor of the way that we are never on our own in a city. We're never isolated. We're never able to escape and shouldn't try to escape the way that we are codependent and that we are reliant on everyone around us to make a safe and vibrant landscape. And those sorts of tragedies have ripple effects you'd never see coming.
That's an amazing story. I'm talking with Jamie Garbacek. She's the creator of the anthology Ghosts of Seattle Past. It's also an interactive art exhibit. And I have to say, though, it feels like when we talk about change, particularly in Seattle, where it happens so rapidly, we always assume that there's loss, that there's heartbreak associated with it. I mean, I looked at three news stories yesterday about change and development in Seattle, and I'll read you the headlines. Two are from the Seattle Times. Upzoning has some Belltown residents worried. Mm-hmm. Row House Cafe, a South Lake Union holdout to be torn down for apartments, and then a third one from Crosscut. Poor gargoyles. We're smashing Seattle's history as we build. I mean, does change always have to bring this sense of loss?
I think change is inevitable and often good and healthy. I'm pro-density. I think there's an easy assumption to make that this is some kind of NIMBY project, and the truth is it couldn't be further from that. I mean, I am from the East Coast, and I'm used to dense cities, and I think that that can be a really healthy environment for thriving art and diversity. The difference is the way that we're developing here and the rapidity of it, and whether or not that process is inclusive. And so, yes, I do think that there's always going to be loss, but I don't think that that needs to have the collateral damage of so much forgetting. There hasn't been as much effort to preserve culturally significant spaces here in some respects as many other cities. And again, I'm not anti-development, but I want to see it be an inclusive process that has demographically diverse conversations involved. I don't want as much cultural erasure as has been prevalent in Seattle's history. I mean, we have a very long history of erasing what came before in order to capitalize on innovation in the moment. And I think that if we want to be this world-class city that we all sit around dreaming about, that to do that, it needs to be an inclusive process, and we need to be really cautious that we don't price out all artists and people of color and queer people, because it's going to become a really homogenous, very white, very rich city with a lot less to recommend it if we are not more careful about that.
It does make me wonder, though, the portrait you are painting of Seattle's future doesn't sound very exciting, and it doesn't sound very welcoming. Do you have any optimism for Seattle's future?
I'll be honest, I'm definitely afraid for Seattle right now. San Francisco's dead. It's over. It's still a beautiful city, but it doesn't have the same heartbeat that it had 20 years ago. And I don't want to see that happen here. I don't think that it's inevitable. But I think that there's a real danger of it becoming frighteningly the same, you know, a very repetitious landscape. And I don't mean just condos. I mean the kind of people who can afford to be here and the kind of businesses and projects that can afford to be here, the kind of art that can afford to thrive here. And so I think it's possible that it can continue to be wonderful, but I think we're at a really dangerous tipping point right now where it could kind of go either way. And what I wanted for this project was two things, was for people to have a way to process this change in grief and to commemorate the places that they loved, and for that to, you know, to be something that people can hold in their hands and to give it back to them. And at the same time, it was to hopefully inform the city and developers and city officials and people who are making some of the choices about what is going to happen in the city going forward, about what mattered most and what was most significant to people at a certain moment in time.
So beyond remembering what places that are gone might have meant to me, what would you have me do? How can we contribute to this vision that you're talking about for what Seattle could be?
Show up to your community's events and picnics and theater productions. Not everyone can show up to like a city planning meeting. You know, you might not have childcare, you might be working three jobs. Like, there's a barrier to entry to being involved in the process of being part of the planning. But you can help to make sure that more diverse voices are heard if you are in dialogue with your neighbors. You know, when we were gathering stories, a lot of it wasn't just what came into us. You know, I was going out and interviewing people, but we were going to, say, like the Roots family picnic at Gasworks. You know, we would show up to that because I lived in the Central District and I knew a lot of the people there, and we would ask them about places they miss, and some of the things that would come up isn't necessarily what you'd anticipate. I mean, I expect to hear about the old jazz venues that are gone, but I didn't expect to hear about the lack of a specific hardware store that had been a very important cultural service, in the sense that the owner would go right to people's houses and help them make repairs, and they had specialized knowledge and they were willing to give things on credit to people they knew. And that was a huge leg up for a lot of families in economic distress. These sorts of things weren't even on my radar as being the biggest concerns. But once you start showing up for your community in that way, once you know that, it's so much easier to make sure that there is representation and to make sure that their concerns are included in the decision-making of the city. You know, don't live in your little bubble in this city in the future. Get outside your comfort zone and interact with as many people as are in this city, or else pretty soon it's just going to be you and people just like you here.
That's Jamie Garbacek, creator of Ghosts of Seattle Past. The book is out today. There are readings tonight at Elliott Bay Books and The Rendezvous.